no, no. 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 This guy's too excited about it. This is crazy. What? I've never had that happen. That's Thank you, Miz, for...
They love you.
That's a first. I've never had that.
They yelled your name. They love you.
Yeah, Dave, go fuck yourself for like the 850th time.
Wow.
For the Terminator bit that
That's
we can't
really...
kill.
It's just your name, bro.
And he's just texting. This is who this man is. This is who you followed.
Stop on it.
With the Gary name. He's timing it. He's timing the show. Yeah, come on, guys. Let's take our goddamn seats. What the hell?
Hello.
You ask one thing. Brooklyn. For everybody to stay seated for an hour and 40 minutes and to not move. And people are like, well, we gotta listen to our bodies. No, you don't. Okay? Ignore your bodies.
It's my first
time.
Hi,
New York. What? It's great to be here.
I've never been here. What a great place.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Want to just do the 5 ads and then we'll start?
You're listening to The Dollop. This is a bilingual American history podcast. Each week, in both Spanish and Czechoslovakian, I read a story from American history to my friend.
Njad compadre, istiaf, Gareth Reynolds.
What?
Just holding up my end of the deal, asshole.
Do you want to announce any tour dates you got coming up? Or
I have a bunch of stand-up dates I'll be doing. You can go to GarethReynolds.com and see those. And are you laughing because I don't know them by heart?
100%. I'm 100%
quite a high bar to set. I'll be all over the place. You can go find out. GarethReynolds.com. I'll be everywhere. GarethReynolds.com. We're ready for you to go there for information.
These are the cities that we can announce that we'll be going to in November. Stockholm, Oslo. Is it Oslo?
Oslo.
Oslo.
Oslo. There you go.
Amsterdam.
We're off to Oslo start.
Amsterdam, Glasgow, Manchester, London.
These are not in America, by
Birmingham,
the way.
Cardiff, and Dublin, and hopefully Copenhagen. And now bring up your friend.
Well, we have a very great guest. This is a guy I met when I was first here for a gig doing stand-up, and he was like the funniest guy I'd seen in the clubs in New York. He's got a podcast called Flagrant 2. He's my buddy. Give it up for Akash Singh. He's got a dynamite and a dynamite top in my dad's jacket.
I would never.
From 88.
Yep, that's a hot jacket.
Thank you, buddy.
People can see you coming.
Thank you.
We're brought to you in part by Policy Genius. Look, if someone relies on you for financial support, whether it's a child or an aging parent or even a business partner, you need life insurance. Life insurance, it gives you peace of mind. So if something happens to you, your loved ones, they're going to have a financial cushion to pay for things like rent, mortgage, loans, education, just everything, daily expenses. And usually life insurance gets more expensive as you age. So start a policy soon rather than, you know, waiting on it. So look, head over to policygenius.com and answer a few questions about yourself. And in just a few minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need. And then you compare personalized quotes to find your best price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. And they work for you. So Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. So you can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered. They don't add on extra fees. They don't sell your info to third parties. So head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. We are brought to you in part by Zen Business. Look, a lot of people right now, the great resignation is on. They're like, they're out of their jobs. They're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want more control over my life. I want a better life. I don't want a boss man telling me what to do. And so a lot of people are starting their own business. Zen Business is very, very helpful. They got an all-in-one platform. It guides you as a new entrepreneur through all the stuff you have to go through to get it going, an LLC or whatever you're going to set up. Got a super easy pricing structure. Starts as low as $49. And then look, they're not going to hit you with a bunch of hidden fees. It's all very straightforward. What they say is what it is. They have a very fast and simple business formation for LLC and other business structures. Worry-free compliance and annual filings, so you can stay in good standing with the state. You can secure an employee ID number so you can open a bank account, hire employees, protect your personal, all that stuff. I wish I had Zen Business when I started my business. It would have freed up all that time I spent on paperwork and all that stuff, so I could have just focused on the business. So look, Zen Business has helped hundreds of thousands of people get their business off the ground by guiding them every step of the way and making it easier to launch a successful business. Get started today for as low as $49 at zenbusiness.com/dollop. That's zenbusiness.com/dollop. March
28th, 1825. Oh, shit. Wait, see, you know, that is like, you know, I mean, that's not good. Anything around this time is not good.
Are any of these stories good?
No. No, they're not. But yeah, these are exceptionally been... like...
Truck yeah. Nuts was good.
Yeah.
Although those guys almost killed each other, so that wasn't that great. This has been one. Oh, Robert Smalls.
Yeah, that was another good one.
Whitmore was good. What?
Okay, well, we're talking about
there's
one...
some good ones. But mostly, you want to die afterwards.
No, yeah.
Tank, yeah, that's right.
The tank, yeah, real feel-good episode. This dude stole a tank, and they killed him. Anyway.
That's that guy's version of a feel-good story.
Yeah.
It's about a guy who took meth and then stole a tank and died.
Yeah.
That's great. That's very up. It's very uplifting.
Yeah.
Frederick Henriette August Wiesner was born in Kassel, Germany.
That's too many names, right?
Yeah. And also Kassel, Germany? That's a little boast.
I mean, it's...
It's just one big castle. What else is it? Nothing. If you leave the castle, you left the town. Now, are we talking male or female?
It's a lady.
Okay.
What?
Oh, man, buckle up, but... It's been a long night.
That's just a very dudish name, I think.
It's in Kassel. They do it different there.
All right, fair enough.
She was the third of seven children.
Sure.
One died, so that's pretty good for them.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
That's a hot ratio for back then. You're killing it.
No, you're bragging about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, just the six. One passed. It's like, whatever.
You kept 86% of your kids back then. That's solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were a Jewish family. Frederica grew and grew and grew. And when she reached adulthood, she was 6 feet tall and around 250 pounds.
Okay.
I told you it was a mannish name. this bitch is Brienne of Tarth.
It's a Game of Thrones reference.
Oh, yeah. That's the Starbucks show, right? Where everyone watched it for a long time, and then they just were like, fuck you guys. We drink Starbucks.
So she'd be big for now, but back then everyone was tiny, so she's like a fucking Yeti. Like, she's
right.
Like...
Right.
So in 1848, she married Wolf Mandelbaum.
Wolf Man?
Only guy that can handle this girl.
Oh, yeah. This is Wolf Mandelbaum. I'm the Wolf Mandelbaum. How are you? I'm an accountant, actually.
He was a peddler. He bought livestock, grain, vegetables from the country, and then he brought them into the city to resell.
Okay.
Which people looked down on. That was not a respectable job.
Sure.
They didn't make a lot of money. So 4 months after they were married, Frederica had their first child, Bertha.
Well, what kind of name list are they checking off here? They're like, going to be the funniest family of all time. That's our goal. This is Wolf Mandelbaum.
But Bertha's a big girl's name, so they knew. Yeah. Like, they're like, you know, we're not making anybody petite.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You need a name that fits.
They nicknamed her Bessie.
What is going on? What are they doing? What?
So things at this time are not great in Germany. There had been a potato blight in 1840.
Oh, the great potato blight?
One of the many potato blights. Poor people were starving. There were hunger riots and rebellions against the government. And for the metal bombs, even worse, because growing anti-Semitism. Christian merchants passed laws that
limited...
Christian merchants passed laws that limited the job Jews could work at and what they could sell.
Okay.
Okay.
So, in 1850...
Oh, people hate Jews always. What is that?
Germany,
I'm the only one? I'm the only one who's like, God damn, that keeps happening, huh? I can't be the only one who thought that.
I never thought about that before, actually. Yeah, it's like black in fashion.
It's like,
it's like
my jacket. It just goes and comes back in fashion every couple decades.
There's a lot of stuff I didn't say right there. There's a lot. The whole Rolodex of shit that what did not come out of my mouth. In 1850, the metal bombs left for America. Wolf sailed first. Frederica and Baby Bessie came 2 months later. So they're below deck. She had to... So there's no room. It's the cheapest ticket you can get. So they're below deck. She had to move through a passageway that was 7 feet long. Or sorry, it's not a passageway. It's just the area where they are. 7 feet long, 2 feet wide, and 6 feet high.
Oh, shit. So literally her measurement. Yeah. Like, this is a joke, isn't it? What am I on? This is a nightmare. She's like moving the boat backwards. What's happening? What's happening? I can't steer. I'm trying to take a piss. I can't.
There's also no ventilation and poor waste disposal, as we say.
That's a great combo. Yeah. That's a perfect combination.
So there are frequent outbreaks of typhus, cholera, dysentery. So like today's cruise ships, no different. No different than what we do now. So they made it to New York, were reunited with Wolf, and eventually they moved into a tenement at 383 8th Street in Little Germany in what is now the East Village. Well,
That's what we call minor enthusiasm. that's what that would be diagnosed as.
Because everybody goes, I live there and I pay rent there.
Yeah. I've walked there.
So they had a single dark room, no windows.
Awesome.
That's about what it's like now. In
yeah,
New York,
that's
honestly.
That's about, what, $2,500 a month
yeah,
right
yeah,
now?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a six-story building that was built to house 10 families, but there were 20 families or more living in the building. In the area, 15 people squeezed into tenement apartments, measuring about 325 square feet.
Oh.
Some lived in the dirt floor basement of the building. So they have no window, no light, no plumbing, no heating, just a stove.
Well, that's cool. What's the real estate guy like? He's like, so this place, you're going to love this. It's got all natural dirt floors. You can see we've taken all the windows out of here, so it's just that. It's all candlelight. There's no heating. There's no restroom. But a stove, a two burner.
So you can choke to death from yeah. the...
It's a place to put your head when you want to go bye-bye, which will be very shortly after you sign this lease.
So toilets are outside. Water for cooking and bathing had to be hauled up in buckets. So immigrants are flowing into New York because everyone's like, I got to have a piece of that.
Yeah.
Ever think about how much other countries suck that they're like, I need that.
Yeah. I got to get out of Castle.
Their neighborhood was rat infested, crime ridden. Garbage was just tossed into the street from windows. New York Times quote, boxes of garbage were tossed out on the street. Composed of potato peelings, oyster shells, night soil. That's shit.
Night soil?
Night soil. I made some night soil.
That's a great one. That's up there.
They did have potatoes, though, so, you know, at least they got that. That's a win.
Sure, yeah.
That's,
yeah,
right.
That's why they came.
Yeah, no, it's like The Martian. Yeah.
They just throw potatoes out in the street.
No, potato peelings. Not whole potatoes.
They got potatoes to eat, though, so there you go.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So, potato peelings, oyster shells, night soil, rancid butter, dead dogs, and dead cats.
What's happening at the end of this list?
How'd it get worse than night soil?
dead dogs, dead cats.
One festering, rotting, loathsome, hellish mass of air poisoning, death breeding filth, reeking in the fierce sunshine. So that's a nice. It's a good. The New York Times now has the right.
That's just Chinatown, guys. What is everybody talking about? This is a big deal.
The half-starved immigrants were a lot of them wore rags. So the Mandelbaums were lucky to have a room of their own. But overcrowded, unsanitary conditions led to many epidemics for poor immigrants. 65 immigrant children died to every 8 non-immigrant children.
Wow.
So they're fucking killing it if they're...
Literally, yeah.
Yeah. 75% of children under 2 died each year.
Wow.
Whoa, shit.
Jesus.
Middle-class and upper-class New Yorkers blamed immigrants for bringing disease. Tuberculosis became known as the Jewish disease.
Oh, I told you. Yeah. Everywhere. No. Y'all act like I'm crazy.
I like how it's your redemption story. The Jews were persecuted further. What did I tell you? I won. I won the podcast.
One of the children who died was Bessie.
Oh.
So we never get to see how big she was going to get.
Oh, that's a damn shame. Well, WNBA lost a star.
No. I mean, that's... Okay. I was invested in the future of this one, so...
Yeah. So Frederica and Wolf worked as peddlers, selling everything from rags to broken timepieces to scraps of silk.
So business had to be really good. Oh, it's broken. All right, I'm listening. I like what I hear so far.
Why do these guys peddle everywhere? They have no discernible talent whatsoever. They're just peddling
across
continents.
Rag around selling shit.
All right, fair enough.
They couldn't afford a horse and cart, so Frederica hauled the goods on her back.
Jesus.
And
that's what she built for, guys.
And she'd walk the crowded streets. They were unpaved, muddy, and littered with garbage. Some peddlers used gimmicks to attract attention.
Well, like I can't wait.
Blowing bugles.
What a great gimmick. I think a prince is about to walk in. It's a rag. Oh, well, I'm over here. Yeah, I'll buy one. Yeah, I could use a rag.
Arranging pieces of fruit in precarious octagons.
I mean, that's what you do when you're on acid. I'm going to just put this fruit in a nice little octagon. What are you doing there? Selling broken watches? Yes, please.
And dressing their horses in trousers.
Oh, well, right. Now I'm over there buying whatever they're selling. If I can pet it, just sell pets.
They probably just use one of Frederica's regular pants, and they're like, I throw that on the horse. Just... We got extras.
I'm just trying to...
Picture a horse in trousers?
Yeah, because the horse has got
to... question.
The horse has got to shit and take a pee.
No, like... make night soil. Be cute about it. But also, this is my question. Do you put pants on the front legs, too?
No.
Fuck yeah,
no.
No.
You treat it like a human body?
Yeah, then it's just...
They're
it's
legs.
Like a onesie. You got to have the pant look, you know what I mean? Nice belt around the waist.
Right. Really? Then you got to put a shirt on.
Yeah. Yeah, front's got a shirt. Nice billowy.
Yeah.
So they didn't... The Mandelbaums didn't have to do any of that because Frederica was huge. So she stood out and attracted attention. There was no putting pants on horses.
Right. People were just like...
Look at the giant. There's a Yeti.
There's a horse with pants on. Look at her. Let's go over there. Look at this fruit. You're an idiot. I don't know what your angle is. I put the fruit in a funny octagon. Buddy, no. It's your angle. Do you sell fruit?
No.
What are you doing?
I don't know. Want a broken watch?
So they worked 14-hour days and made around $6 a week. Ugh. But they loved fucking because soon they had 4 kids to feed. 2 boys, 2 girls.
Okay.
So Frederica was described as having the eyes of a sparrow, the neck of a bear, and fat, florid cheeks.
Jesus. Brutal. It's quite a description. Surely not by a friend. She's got some of those real sparrowy eyes, you know what I'm talking about?
What?
She's got bird eyes.
Big ass neck.
Big neck, though.
You're a big lady with little tiny, tiny bird eyes.
She's got baby bird eyes.
She was homely and kept her black hair tightly rolled back. She spoke only when she had to. Her favorite saying, directly mostly at herself, was, quote, "It takes brains to be a real lady."
Oh, my God.
Hard times came in 1857 as there was the usual capitalism collapse.
Oh, boy.
Banks and investors overinvested and took too many risks. Can you imagine?
No. What a weird time.
So I'm glad we fixed all that, though.
Well, that's what I think when I hear about, like, outhouses outside and windowless rooms. It is like, well, we're coming back. We are well, headed right towards it.
Yeah. The banks failed. Businesses closed. Tens of thousands lost their jobs. Hungry children sold slivers of coal and old pieces of rope on the streets.
What are people buying? I don't understand.
I don't know if they know the marketplace very well. I'm actually going to go with the rag stuff. Now that I see what you're selling.
Bit of rope.
No.
Would you like to start a tiny, tiny fire?
Tiny what?
It's a sliver of coal.
Yeah, no, I don't need that. I have a job, you little boy. Get out of here.
Many became pickpockets. Parents permitted or encouraged it because they were desperate. People turned to picking through garbage, scavenging, shoplifting, and robbery.
Well, after hearing what their garbage is, surely there's some good stuff in there. Yeah. Like, oh, look, a dead cat. Awesome. We should, let's arrange this fruit funny and we'll try to sell it.
Daddy, I found night soil.
Oh, no. Junior.
How much is this worth?
No, not much. No, don't eat it. No. Oh, my God. It had cat fur in it, so I'm worried.
So Frederica started building relationships with this horde of aimless children who are petty thieves, and they're looking to get rid of their stolen loot. So they steal stuff, and she's like, oh, I'll buy it.
That's solid.
Okay.
She'd buy what they stole, resell it. Frederica quickly became known on the streets as a middleman, or what we call a fence.
Okay.
I like this.
She's a good businesswoman. She was street smart. Her business grew and grew. Word got out that she was the middleman to go to if you had something to sell or you wanted some cheap stolen goods. She dealt in everything, diamonds, furniture, paintings, silverware, and gold. But her specialty became silk. She bought the finest silk bolts stolen from the best businesses on the East Coast, and she paid her criminals 20% of value. Soon she had a huge network.
Okay.
This is great.
So she's created, she's a union at this point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Soon they had
What's Wolf Mandelbaum doing now? He's like, hon, what about the rags? What are you doing? You hang out with those kids a lot.
So in 1865, she had enough money to move them into a building in the 13th Ward, now the Lower East Side. It was three stories. They lived on the top two floors, and on the bottom floor, they opened a dry goods store, which looks like a typical dry goods store full of dry things.
Yeah. Not the wet stuff that
you see
at the gross. Not no. Yeah, it's not that kind.
No, if you get gravy in there, the whole store is ruined.
Yeah.
But the real action was happening in back. This was the first time Frederica had a base for her fencing operation. And criminals would enter through a side door, go into a secret part of the store, and do their business. She had a chimney built in the middle of the store with a false back, which hit a dumbwaiter with a secret lever.
Wait, there's a lot of terms getting thrown around. She's got a secret chimney with a dumbwaiter and a lazy Susan inside of the dumbwaiter.
What's a dumbwaiter?
It's just an idiot waiter.
No. It's like how it's called a dumb waiter because it's a dumb system, but it's how you like get like dishes from like the base, like from one floor to another.
Oh.
Yeah, so you put it up there. She's got a dumb waiter and a secret chimney.
You've seen in movies, someone's trying to get away from someone and they crawl in the dumb waiter and they go up and they're stabbing and they don't get it.
This is a very specific scene you're talking about in this movie that I'm not sure exists.
He
got stabbed in the dumb waiter.
And then they go down to the basement and that's where the ghost is.
What? I think he's pitching a movie he wrote. I really do. Dumb waiter ghost basement.
You say it now, but wait till that movie's fucking bringing it to
Without question,
million.
It will hit.
So that's where she would quickly hide shit if anybody came in and she was worried. She'd throw it in the dumb waiter and down it would go.
Okay.
Wolf didn't have really anything to do with the business.
Oh.
The New York City police chief called him, quote, a non-entity.
Oh, it's better to be called a criminal. He's a nothing. He's not a wolf man either.
I mean, he's done nothing this whole bullets. Time. He couldn't even carry the goods on his back. Like, no, this guy's useless. Can you imagine a world where you let your wife carry the goods on her back? Like, no, you got that. You and the horse. You guys handle that.
I'm going to put some pants on the horse while you carry all that shit.
I'm just building shitty octagons here. You guys carry everything for
now
me.
Look, I made a stop sign at a Kiwi. What do you think of that? Randy, who's your wolf man? She's so distant lately.
Sophia Lyons, who you may remember from Dollop 355. From Detroit, she said he was, quote, rather weak-willed for his calling, lazy and afflicted with chronic dyspepsia, which indigestion.
Why is he getting? Why? I mean, I understand he's not. I understand he's a nothing, a non-entity, but why so much?
He sounds like a sad sack. Like he sounds like a. He made this noise a lot.
Yeah. This guy sucks.
Now
this
guy is
building a criminal empire. Most conspicuous person in the whole fucking city.
And he's just moping.
Yeah.
I'm going to go kick rocks for a while. How come we have a dumb waiter and no restaurant?
baby.
Right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have. Sorry. You're right. We have money, and that's what you should focus on. Yeah. I'm going to go feed the birds. Good. Be back by supper. That's not the door that goes outside. Oh, sorry. Bye. That's my wolf exterior. Back in for supper.
Oh, God. How can we have a dumb waiter and no restaurant? It's so fucking funny.
All right, so like they said, they had four kids. She was a loving mother, doted on her kids. Even though she was the head of a criminal network, she always made sure never to miss a school recital. She'd cancel business deals if one of her kids was sick because the sudden death of Bessie had made her overprotective and fawning. She's very close with her kids. Didn't let them out of her sight for long. She was taught the ropes by successful fences like General Abe Greenthal, Joe Eirik, and Ephraim Snow. She paid them for their knowledge. The biggest thing she learned was to bribe the cops and politicians and to be fair to the criminals and only buy what you knew you could sell.
It's a pretty good list.
Dude.
Yeah. Bribing's always been good.
Yeah.
That's like the 10 crack commandments of the 1800s right there.
Soon she wasn't just working with people on the Lower East Side. She started selling to rich people. George Redinger, who was a rich as fuck owner of the Passaic Hotel in New Jersey, bought stolen goods from Frederica all the time. He bought silverware, tablecloths, blankets, and more for his hotel at half the price it would have cost him from legitimate retailers.
Okay.
It's so weird that rich people would...
Yeah, it's weird, because they're not like that now.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're not. They're good.
They're cool now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually attributed it more to Jersey.
Interesting angle.
He's right. So she's.
Wait, I did the show in Brooklyn. You had to come over here. There's a reason nobody's going to Jersey. I live there. It sucks. I should know.
So she's a job provider, but she never got her hands dirty. Instead of building. She built an inner circle of burglars, pickpockets, and robbers. She had thieves who brought in goods, skilled artisans, and jewelry was melted down, and silver and diamonds reset, other precious stones, carriage drivers to help with getaways, clerks around the store.
So this is
people
now.
Moving. Yeah, she's got a business.
This is now, yeah, this is now crazy.
Yeah.
Right. She's Walter White now. She's we're moving.
Yes.
Totally. Our buddy.
Yeah. Gareth has a very funny bit where he does voicemails of Frankie. How do you say his name? Frankie Muniz?
No. It's not how you say it. Frankie Muniz.
Frankie Muniz.
No. I just told you.
Frankie Muniz.
Frankie Muniz.
calling Bryan Cranston and pitching new shows to him. It's a really funny bit that he just falls into character with sometimes. That's why he looked at me when he said Breaking Bad. Okay, sorry.
It's a great bit.
I thought he would do one, but I'm just still here talking like an idiot.
No, I will not.
So
I'll leave you hanging out to dry. You're in the dry goods store.
Yeah.
No. No, miss. Not. No. No.
Hey, Brian, Frankie again. That's just how they all start. That's enough.
Shut the fuck up! What's happening? There's a lot of energy out there. Akash got booed and cheered in like 4 minutes.
I stand by what I said earlier.
Do not.
No, my girl is beautiful and brilliant, but she's never like, the brains is what makes me a lady. That's not, you know, it's just...
No.
You guys are just booing. You're not even listening.
All right.
Brooklyn. But buddy, let's go back to Jersey. These people don't know shit.
Turning into a New York Comedy Club situation. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very comfortable there.
So Frederica became a mentor to aspiring criminals. She trained women to be criminals right alongside men. Her
I don't know how I did this, but a riot's going to break out.
Her protégés called her Marm, which is short for mother, because she
was... It's actually longer than mother.
Marm.
Mom's short for mother, and that's really short. It's shorter. I've read.
It's because she was a mother figure and she watched over them and she protected them while nurturing their criminal careers. Quote, they called me Ma because I give them money and horses and diamonds.
Just like Marm used to do. Right? Here's your horse and your diamonds. Thanks, Marm. Where should I go? I don't know. I'm a criminal. I don't have...
Marm called all of her protégés her little chicks.
Sure. Sure.
Men and women. She just called them little chicks. The newspapers started calling her Marm Mandelbaum or Mother Mandelbaum. Marm became very wealthy. In turn, she reinvested in her business with bribes to higher authorities. She paid off corrupt Tammany Hall and bribed authorities to look the other way. Tammany Hall would just put in a word and a case would vanish from the court docket. Marm brought tenements and several warehouses to house all the stolen goods.
Jesus Christ.
Her business expanded out to Trenton and Newark.
What? She's like IKEA. This is bananas. People are just like, what are you opening it for? She's like, well, just another soccer tournament.
Soon she was getting goods, stolen goods from all over the East Coast. After the Chicago fire of 1871, looted goods poured in and she resold them for a sizable profit.
That's amazing that during the Chicago fires, people are like, it's actually a great time to be in Chicago. It's a great time to be an entrepreneur.
Most of the stolen goods from the Chicago fire went through her. Quote, following the great Chicago fire, someone showed up at her haberdashery shop with a herd of goats they'd stolen during the fire.
That is quite a journey for stolen goats.
Yeah.
Those goats are like, please take us. This is a nightmare.
Kill me.
We are goats.
She took them and sold them. Upstairs above the dry goods store, her home was lavish. The dining room had cut glass chandeliers. More than 60 guests fit comfortably at two mahogany tables with matching chairs. The tables were covered in linen tablecloths and lit with golden candelabras. The room had plush carpet, embroidered silk drapes, upholstered couches, ornate fireplace, and carved bookcases. She hosted big dinner parties. She would sit at the head of the table.
Still no idea what Wolf is doing, huh?
Yeah, Wolf, meanwhile...
He's a non-entity.
He's writing a musical in the basement. He's like, it'll show her. It's all about a man who's a wolf. And neglected.
Marm would sit at the head of the table on an embroidered...
By the way, of course. Who the fuck else? Wolf's going to sit there? I don't know what to do. Just serve the food, Wolf. I can't. I'm sad again. Oh, God damn it. You still love me, right, Marm? You don't call me Marm. I told you this. It's fucking weird.
What you want me to call you?
Putting like fruit arrangements and heart shapes on the bed. She's like, that's gonna go through the duvet. I messed up again. No, you did good, Wolf. You did great. Jesus Christ. Get a hobby or something. Did you say get a hobby under your breath? No, I was talking to myself. Sad Wolf.
There they go. So she would sit on an embroidered cushioned bench, because she was too large to sit in the chair. And next to her sat her husband, Wolf.
Wow. He's like, we're both in charge. Yeah. My little man's not playing dress up. I'm a big boy. You sure are, Wolf. My feet don't touch the ground. Don't tell people that. That's not what we told you. We're not going to tell people that. I'm like a kid on the Tonight Show. Wolf.
Like a kid on the Tonight Show.
Julius sat next to them. He was now part of the business. That's their son, Julius.
Okay.
At the dinner party were judges, cops, businessmen, politicians, and all her criminals. They would all mingle together. Criminal Piano Charlie entertained her guests on the grand piano.
Well, of course. Yeah, what if he was a drummer? I don't know why they call me that.
Piano Charlie was one of Marm's favorites. He came from a wealthy family and was a classically trained pianist. He had squandered all of his inheritance on booze, women, and gambling, and then turned to crime. And he became an expert safecracker. With help from Marm, Piano Charlie pulled off a string of successful bank and train robberies, including $100,000 from the Hudson River Railway Express.
You know, I don't think his nickname's doing him justice. It's just, he's so much more. It's for Billy Joel.
In 1869, Charlie was caught and arrested by Pinkerton detectives.
That's the worst, right.
Back then, the worst now. They've never stopped. He and an accomplice were being held in the White Plains Jail. His attorney...
I don't know if
yeah, really?
It's where I'm from.
It looked like her attorneys couldn't get him off and his accomplices. So Marm came up with a plan. She got together several of her crew and rented an office space in the building next door to the jail.
Oh, my God.
She's the fucking greatest.
Walter White.
Dude.
That is crazy.
She is the one who knocks.
Is this going to be Magnet?
They bribed some prison guards to look the other way and then dug through the wall of the office into the White Plains Jail.
What?
This is so dope.
What?
The men escaped and
she's
were driven
away. Shaking them? What's and behind that Betty Page poster? Nothing.
They escaped in a awaiting carriage and Marm held a celebration party and Piano Charlie entertained the guests.
Yeah, he better. Yeah. The idea that your getaway car is a carriage.
Go!
Yeah. We're going to chase him. This will be a few days of this. It'll be...
Mary had two attorneys, William Howe and Abraham Hummel, on retainer at all times. She paid him $5,000 a year. If any of her criminals got into trouble, she would send the lawyers to help. Howe and Hummel made a fortune defending New York's most infamous criminals. They were so well known that a common toast in taverns was, here's Howe, and there's Hummel. Now I don't like New York City criminals anymore.
Yeah. Not the golden age of slogans.
So this was a time of horrendous inequality, if you guys can imagine that.
Wait, this is an American podcast, I thought. In this country? What was there, super rich and then a bunch of poors?
Yeah.
Imagine.
This happened especially after the Civil War, because there was a lot of war profiteering. The majority of New Yorkers lived in dire poverty, but with industrialization, there was a super rich, such as Mammy Fish, wife of a railroad magnate. Held a dinner.
Makes,
yeah, it's not
like,
going
what?
Good.
The train's moving.
Early American X-Men.
Yeah. I'm the train magnet.
I'll start that. Start that sentence again. Mamie, Mammy? Is it Mammy? Is that the name is?
Mammy? Let's go with Mamie. It's a little Mammy? Less tense.
Yeah.
Mammy Fish, wife of railroad magnate, held a dinner party to honor her dog.
To honor her...
Dog is doing more than wolf.
At which she gave the dog a $15,000 diamond collar.
This is just... No, no. This is becoming... No.
It's like today.
It is. This like is...
What's his name? The treasury guy?
Mnuchin.
Mnuchin. His dad just bought a 90...
Well...
Calm the fuck down.
Yes,
his
we all agree.
His dad just bought a $90 million piece of art. It's a fucking...
$90 million piece of art?
Art. It's like a 3-foot statue.
But won't it be fun to drink wine from his skull? Like, it's all just part of the build-up to when we're... They're like, it was worth it.
So she's paying $15,000 for a dog collar. At the time, about 3/4 of the country's population earned less than $1,200 a year. The Gilded Age in America brought a whole new level of disparity between the incredibly rich and pathetically poor in the U.S. Marm and her crew mostly stole from the rich and powerful. Banks, mansions, fancy restaurants, jewelry stores, the poor basically cheered whenever they heard of another robbery. Marm took things a step further and set up the Bureau for the Protection of Criminals.
Wow, what? Oh, that's bold. That's bold policymaking.
It was a fund that provided bail money and legal representation for criminals.
That's amazing.
She also established a crime school on Grand Street.
That's so good.
What? Were there... Who's in charge of everything right now? Because they're really not doing what they're supposed to. Crime school. Yeah, give me the stamp. Yeah, let's do that. What's the worst that could happen?
It was actually right near police headquarters.
I feel like she's doing this on purpose. Like, fuck you. Yeah. I really do. Yeah. I feel like she's doing it like, fuck you. I'm going to put it right next to the cops. Watch how untouchable I am.
Yeah. We're calling ourselves the police department. Now, Marm...
Young men, women, and children enrolled. It was one of the first co-educational schools of the 19th
God
century.
God damn it. Checking a lot of boxes.
Professional pickpockets and thieves taught their skills to new students.
What is going on? This feels... It's like the Harry Potter of criminals.
How do you grade pickpocketing? What's like a C-minus pickpocket?
I felt you. I felt it.
Okay,
I felt
right,
it.
Enough.
I knew you were going for my watch.
All right,
so.
Fair enough.
Midterms are almost here, guys. If we're going to do this right, let's really get those fingers sticky. Come on, guys.
The young ones started off learning about smaller crimes like pickpocketing and petty theft. If they had the skills, they would advance and graduate up into other more important crimes like outright robberies and scams.
Outright robberies. Okay, that's awesome. So it's like AP.
That's right.
I'm going to scams. What you got next? Outright robbery? Okay.
Right. I flunked it. I got to go back to grifting.
I shot myself.
Yeah. I don't think you're allowed to be here anymore.
I had the gun the wrong way, and I was like, bang! That's why my nickname's Half Charlie.
But I took my own wallet. Not a total loss.
Fail. Other higher-level subjects included safe-cracking, blackmail, and burglary.
And it's just nobody knows about this? Or how is
what
this?
What is the class on blackmail? It's not that hard.
Well, you got to know how to set it up and how to take the money without...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The best students got to work with Marm herself. They just had to agree to sell everything they stole to her and no one else. She trained women shoplifters to work in pairs.
It's like UCB.
Uh,
One was...
except
they got paid more.
The same to me.
One...
Guys, I take shots. Sometimes I miss, sometimes I hit. I don't know. This is how it's going to go.
One was a lookout while the other stuffed goods into a large pockets concealed under her dress. Pickpockets worked in pairs too. One would tell a sad story to a stranger while the other one stole his wallet.
So in other words, eventually you were like, I won't listen to sad stories anymore. Get robbed every That's time.
Right. Fuck you.
Mister, I need your help. No, not falling for that one.
One of Marm's greatest students was Sophia Lyons, who I said, who became known as the Princess of Crime. Marm was known as the Queen of Fences. Her willingness to train and employ women in her crime ring created opportunities for women that were not available elsewhere. Despite her running a criminal ring, she is credited with being one of the first feminists because she was able to get women jobs in which they made more money and were able to use their skills in better ways than they did working in factories or as maids. You're cheering being criminals.
Okay. Fully aware.
It's way more fun than coding.
Yeah, seriously.
You know what I mean?
But Marm did not have sympathy for the wives of criminals who died and came asking for money.
Interesting, Rick. Well,
she got a whole school that could teach them everything they need to know.
Well, that's what she thought. Yeah. She thought they should get out and work and complain that most women were, quote, wasting life being housekeepers.
And not criminals.
She is living in another era. She's all over the map.
Yeah, she's like raising a family while being a master criminal. She's like, everyone should do
this. Yeah, but also she's married to Wolf Mandelbaum. Yeah.
He's just laying there.
He's 28.
I used to be a man.
Wolf, you're going one again in your pants.
Oh.
Carry me around on your back.
How's your garden?
Not good.
I got him all these seeds. I thought it would give him something to... He tried to plant pumpkins. I don't know.
I ate them.
You ate the seeds alone by themselves?
Yeah.
Did you read the directions?
I wanted to see if I could make tomatoes.
Yeah, you plant them. That's what the package said. Did you read the package of the tomato seeds, Wolf?
If I eat them, then they come out.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to go sleep in the other bedroom. The office. Sorry, the office.
Okay, I'm going to masturbate.
That's good, Wolf. There's a full moon if you want to check it out. Or no, just stay there. Write in your little diary.
Now, Mary turned her focus to a new venture, bank robberies. She now started putting groups of robbers together, and she'd front them around $30,000 to buy tools, pay off bribes, and hire getaway carriages and do other stuff. The robberies were meticulously planned out, sometimes for months. One of her star bank robbers was George Leslie. He'd never committed a robbery before he came to Marm. He had been an architect in Cincinnati.
What? That sounds like a fine career. Well, he was like, yeah, but now I want to have a gun. I really do. It's like a fantasy camp.
Well, the Civil War came along, and his wealthy father paid $300 to buy his way out of the Civil War.
And why didn't he just say bone spurs? That work?
No, still the best. The best is anal cyst.
The what?
Rush Limbaugh, anal cyst. It's still the best. Still the best.
Wait, that's news to me.
Yeah.
He said what? Anal what?
Anal cyst. How can I shoot, guys? My butt hurts.
I mean, wouldn't you rather go to war than have people be like, he has anal cysts?
But don't you look at Rush Limbaugh and think, he probably got anal cysts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He is an anal cyst.
So So once he bought his way out of the Civil War, then everyone in Cincinnati found out about it and hated him for doing that, and he was basically ostracized out of the city. Like, they were like,
"Yeah,
you're a loser." So he goes to New York.
Okay.
George invented a new burglary tool called the Little Joker.
What?
He's an architect.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, indeed.
It fit inside the combination dial of any bank safe. So once inside, it would record the numbers someone stopped at when they opened the safe.
Wow.
That's fucking brilliant.
Wow.
If she doesn't cheat on Wolf with this guy, I don't, I'm leaving.
So he would break into a bank, put the device in the combination dial, wait a couple days, then break in again. Take it out, and then open the
wow. Vault.
Using the Little Joker, George robbed Ocean Street Bank of $800,000
in
cash.
Holy shit. Wow.
Securities. The biggest bank robbery ever. Marm got 50%.
Mm-mm. And Wolf was given a handful of quarters. He for video games? Wolf.
Food? The New York Herald called it, quote, a masterful bank job pulled off by one very special bank robber.
That's bulletin board stuff right there. You're like, look at that. That's me. Don't tell anyone, but I did that.
Marb was obsessed with social acceptance and always maintained an air of refinement. She dressed stylishly, wore diamond earrings, but didn't overdo it. The only thing that she had that was over the top was her signature hat.
Well, over the top hat for this time means, dude, I don't even know what to tell you. But they were like, if you had like a fruit basket and an owl on your head, people were like, who did that? Like, or people were just like, morning. Like,
it was usually adorned with dark feathers or plumes. She wore it perched on the very top of her head like a bird's nest, just resting kind of adjacent. Yeah. Wolf Mandelbaum had been ill and bedridden for 5 years now.
How do you know he wasn't just laying out?
I think,
you know what I mean? Like, what else was there for him to do?
I feel bad, but I think you might be right that he was just like, Wolf, close that door. Don't let the light in. Wolf.
He probably had tuberculosis, but he died in March 1875 at the age of 51.
I don't feel bad for this guy.
There goes the hero of our story.
Yeah. I don't think that's the last we've heard of old Wolf Mandelbaum. Oh, it is? It is? Oh, okay. Interesting. Thought maybe there was a...
The primary cause of death was listed as encephalitis gavura, a.k.a. brain fever. The second cause was, quote, the wasting away disease.
I told you.
Told
he had
you.
That since they got married.
I told you.
I told you.
Not really.
I know what I'm talking about.
I mean, kind of. I told you.
Wasting away disease. This guy's a bum. I'm telling you. You know, hardworking man get wasted as a wasting disease.
Marm was devastated and mourned for over a year. She had fresh flowers placed on his grave every day.
Oh, my. Well, she had the money to do it. I mean,
she probably like stole it from another grave.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, you won't know.
Fucking 100%. That's what was happening.
Yeah.
So she eventually returned to her business. She now relied on her son, Julius, and a man named Hermann Staud. Hermann was a burly blonde German who had also recently been widowed.
That's what she needs right there.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's definitely right. Getting set up like
he
that.
He sounds Staud, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was the only one outside of her immediate family who Marm confided in. Some people refer to Marm and Hermann as a couple, but no one really knows. He was devoted to her, but most of her associates really disliked Hermann and kept their distance. So her school closed down in 1876 after running for 6 years.
6 years?
Yeah. It was over when the son of a prominent cop managed to enroll. Marm then shut it down rather than risk getting busted.
What? Couldn't she just get rid of him?
I don't know what the
deal is. We're shutting it down. He got in, so that's that.
It was also next door to the police station. Now she wants
He might
to
have just thought it was where his dad was. He's like, my dad here?
In 1877, Michael Kurtz, a.k.a. Sheeny Mike, which is a nasty name for Jewish people.
Okay.
Those were the nicknames then. Be like, oh, it's WAP Jimmy. Like, they just all went. They went with the fucking worst thing they could think of.
You guys are still shocked at anti-Semitism. It's crazy. You listen to this podcast. You know what it is. Every time you should be like, yeah, that's about right there. Yep. It's been about 20 minutes. Here we go.
So Sheeny Mike robbed a dry goods store in Boston. His crew made off with 2,000 yards of silk and 26 cashmere shawls. But he was caught, tried, and convicted, and he signed an affidavit stating that he had sold the goods to Marm Mandelbaum. Fucking narc.
Snitch.
Narc!
Yeah.
Yeah. Do your time.
Yeah, do your time.
Do your time. Shut up.
He then received a pardon.
What a bum.
Marm was arrested for receiving stolen goods. Somehow, Sheeny Mike disappeared before the trial. And the case was dropped. You guys are really fucked up as far as...
Yeah, that is... You guys...
Like, you guys have a really skewed moral sort of...
That is one thing I've learned about this show is, you know, sometimes just here, go to the end. You went on every dip of that. Yeah! No! Woo!
So the case is dropped, but the store owner used the affidavit that Sheeny Mike had signed to sue Marm for $6,000 in a civil case.
That's nothing to
her. Nothing. That is nothing.
That's a lot.
That's a lot for back then. It's a lot.
Yeah, but she stole $400,000 from a bank.
Yeah, she's got shitloads.
Yeah.
It took 3 years. She kept delaying it through her lawyers, but finally Marm appeared in court. Buffalo Evening News, quote, "All eyes were turned upon her as she took the stand. She is a portly woman of 50 with dark hair and dark eyes, sallow complexion, and rather high cheekbones."
Jesus Christ. I mean,
The huh? Come on. It's not all bad.
The amount of descriptions in the what happened in the trial? They're like, well, there she was.
Chubby elbows all on the stand.
That's why they had to get the artist for the courtroom. They were like sick of reporters being like, well, it was fashion week again here at the...
Her bosoms were incredible.
All right, and what happened at the trial? You've talked about the bosoms for a while. Did you get inside for the case?
I don't remember.
Awesome.
Strong chin.
Okay.
I did write a 13-page story about bosoms, though.
That is not what you were paid to do.
It's half fiction.
What are you talking about? It's half fiction.
Half reality.
What is the half fiction part about, or do I not want to know? What is the half fiction part about?
The bosoms rob banks. With a dog. I think it's going to be a good story.
It's not what we paid you for, you idiot.
Well, they shouldn't have bosoms then. I get confused.
You're fired is an understatement.
Well, okay then, but I have received a job offer from Bosoms Weekly.
Who's in charge of that magazine?
Matt Walsh.
It's my magazine.
Yes, I had a feeling it might be. It's not really getting a job now, is it? Is it?
I've also started drawing.
That's your face between a pair of bosoms.
Yes, it is. She was dressed in a black cloth trim dress with lace and wore an immense... sealskin sack and a
sealskin sack?
What she's
S A C.
She was at a company picnic before this and was taking part in the sack race and came right to trial.
Sealskin.
I think it's like a kind of jacket, but she had a velvet hat with a beautiful bird's wing across the front.
Not just any wing. A beautiful falcon wing. The thing that tied the outfit together was she had a bird on her face. And
You said Falcon. We've been invited to fly Falcons when we go to Sacramento.
Sure. But
remind me. Remind me.
I don't think there'll be a problem with me reminding you any longer. No. Go fly Falcons.
I would never remember if I didn't tell him right there.
Yeah.
Sacramento got a bunch of fucking rednecks, huh? You just fly Falcons out there?
Dude, Falcons are urban animals.
Yeah. Come on, you know them.
She wore a big breast pin and was partly concealed by her chin.
This is the longest description of an outfit. Okay.
That was partly concealed by her chin, so that's a bummer. That's a... Like, just so we're keeping track, that's a breast pin that's covered by her chin. That's a bummer. And she had diamond earrings in her ears. She spoke in a rather low voice with a marked German accent. Marm explained that she had helped Sheeny Mike as a favor to his mother, who she had known for 20 years. She said she had not did not have personal dealings with Mike. Her efforts were simply a gesture of kindness on behalf of his dear mother. She testified that she had never in her life received stolen property from him or anyone else.
Mm, that is quite a lie. That's a humdinger.
The jury found...
The Bible then caught on fire. Oh, God. That shouldn't be.
The jury found for the plaintiff and awarded him everything that he'd asked for.
$6,000. She was like, all right, here you go. It's actually my hat's worth that. Go fuck yourself.
She got a sealskin jacket.
Yeah.
She didn't fuck about $6,000.
Yeah. No, she's got Paul Manafort's wardrobe. $6,000. It's like, there you go.
Her lawyers appealed, but things are changing in New York. There's a new district attorney.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's always bad.
He used to be a part of Krupp Tammany Hall, but now he's changed, and he has turned against Mark.
What a fucking loser. Yeah. What, did you find God? Get out of here. No one wants that.
3 months into his term, in March 1884, he set his targets on Marm. He knew that Marm had people inside the police department, so he went to the Pinkertons. Yeah, we all get it. We don't like them. Pinkerton agent and German immigrant Gustav Frank was assigned to the case.
Well, this is a conflict. This is like a real Donnie Brasco for him.
He pretended to be a silk merchant named Stein who was looking for bargains.
I'm Stein. I'm after bargains. Silk mainly.
First, he spent several weeks with legitimate silk merchants learning the trade. The first time he entered Marm's shop, he said he wanted to buy very cheap silks. She refused to do business with him, but he kept coming back. Eventually, she decided she would know if the police were conducting a sting because of her contacts in the department, and she began doing business with him. Over a month, Gustav bought 12,000 yards of stolen silk. Pinkerton detectives traced it all back to the original owners using secret marks hidden in the silk.
Oh, whoa.
When he had enough evidence, Gustav got arrest and search warrants, and accompanied by backup Pinkerton detectives, he entered the shop and waved the arrest warrant in Marm's face.
He sounds like the first Giuliani.
He said, quote, "You are caught this time, and the best thing you can do is to make a clean breast of it."
What?
Make a...
Was it the court reporter? Sorry. boobies.
Make a clean breast means to come clean and tell the truth, like get it off your chest. We changed it, I guess.
I wonder why.
But Marm's response was to punch Gustav in the face.
Probably a solid wallop, too. Probably like an Indiana Jones punch.
Well, blood poured out of his nose.
Blood
so she
poured?
So good.
She got him good. The Pinkertons had to hold her back from punching him again. Marm, Julius, and Herman were arrested. Reporters were allowed to then join authorities when they searched the warehouses. One journalist, quote, "It did not seem possible that so much wealth could be assembled in one spot. There seemed to be enough clothes to supply an army. There were trunks filled with precious gems and silverware. Antique furniture was stacked against a wall." So it's like they found the dragon's lair. Like they...
Is this Game of Thrones?
No, that's... No, but they don't have dragon. That's not the... Lord of the Rings.
Game of Thrones has dragons.
But those dragons in Game of Thrones don't collect gold.
I'm not going to have a dragon fight with you right now. All right? Dragons are made up, and they're dragons.
No, they're not.
No, this is more like a Puff the Magic Dragon vibe.
Dragons are made up until you're doing construction in London, and you crack into their vault, and they come flying out, and then they're not made up, are they? Marm, Julius, and Herman were released on bail. Okay, so the bail was posted by several citizens, including John Briggs, who posted bail for Julius using his house as collateral, and Conrad Petrie, who posted bail using his house as collateral. The Pinkerton detectives watched Marm's home and shop 24/7.
Oh boy.
She's out on bail. She would go in. When she went in her carriage, she'd circle around and look at the detectives and give them a wave, and ride away. Now, the day before the trial, Marm left her home, waved to the Pinkertons.
Oh boy!
And then they followed her.
Uh huh.
And she went to her lawyer's office, Howe and Hummel. The Pinkertons waited outside as she exited. As she came out, she waved, and then they followed her home. But they couldn't see her face, which was covered by the plumes of her hat or maybe a bird.
Yeah, but definitely, yeah, she just had an eagle on her face. She's like, that's her.
It was actually Marm's maid who was now wearing her clothing. And
wait, hold the fucking phone. How are there two women this big in New York City?
She found another giant German lady, I guess.
Yo, that's insane.
She's like, I have an interesting proposition for you. Yes, I'm listening.
So Marm then waited till the coast was clear and made a getaway in a waiting carriage. The next day, the court...
In another carriage. Yeah.
Got to take off in that carriage.
The adrenaline rush is insane, isn't it? We're really
doing
it.
Slow down! Slow down!
Yes, we don't want to attract any attention.
You've gone 20 feet.
I feel like the coast is clear.
So the next day the courtroom was packed. District attorney sat at the prosecution table with Robert Pinkerton. Howe and Hummel were at the defense table alone. Howe finally informed the court, quote, "If Your Honor, please, my clients are not in court."
Mm-hmm. So that's a problem, is it not?
Everybody cheered in the courtroom. The district attorney jumped up, quote, "I move, Your Honor, that the bonds of the defendants be forfeited and a bench warrant be issued for the defendants." Judge Barrett ordered a bail to be forfeited. But Marm had outsmarted the bail system.
Hell yeah.
That's why she had gone to Howe and Hummel's office the day before to sign real estate transfers. So the two properties had been put up for bail. She legally transferred them to one of her daughters, then to the relatives of the bondsman.
Wow.
And somehow this got around the law. And so now the property put up by the bondsman can no longer be attached to the bail. So no property, no bail money. So the lawyers explained that to the court.
That had to feel good. Wow.
And Howe said, quote, "I believe Miss Mandelbaum acted upon Mark Twain's theory that absence of body is often better than presence of mind." Howe was thoroughly enjoying the moment. He said he didn't know where the defendants were. Finding them was up to the district attorney's office and the illustrious Pinkerton detectives. And then he winked at Robert Pinkerton.
I I'm astounded at how long the sarcastic wink has been around. Astounding. The first guy to use the wink is a fuck you. They were like, that wasn't cool.
Why'd he wink? She's like Thanos, dude. She's incredible. You cannot beat this woman.
Marm, Julius, and Erman were now on their way to Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. It is estimated she escaped with about $1 million in cash and jewelry, which is about $25 million in today's money. As a PR move, the DA then tried to spin what happened. Quote,
how?
Thank God we are rid of the villain.
Yeah. I was one step ahead of her the entire time. I wanted her to go like this.
All we had to give her was freedom.
Yeah. Now, look at this octagon of fruit and let's move on.
What a callback.
It's actually called the Froctagon.
That's fair.
Pinkerton agreed, quote, it is a victory enough to have got rid of her, and we ought to be thankful for the redemption.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, everyone. Pinkertons! Hip, hip. Okay.
So Marm, Julius, and Herman were only in Canada for a few days before they were arrested and charged with bringing stolen property across the border. Canadian authorities had gotten a tip from an unnamed source. Marm had diamonds valued at $4,000 that had allegedly been stolen from a company in New York. They were confiscated. Marm tried to bribe the police, but they would not take a bribe.
Goddamn
fucking Canadians,
police,
man. Yeah, God damn it.
That would be outside of the Mountie Code. So, no.
The fuck are you talking about? It's
money. I would make a hell of a life with those diamonds, but unfortunately, no. I took an oath to the moose. No.
Hamilton police requested the DA, the New York DA, send someone up to Hamilton to testify, but the DA declined. Because the crime did not qualify for extradition to the U.S., so he was like, fuck it, I don't care.
Yeah. But I thought that was okay now. You could just extradite for nothing. Is that not? Keep going.
The jewelry store's owner came to Hamilton and said the diamonds resembled ones that he had stolen, but he couldn't positively say yes.
Well, it's such a softball for him to be like, those are mine.
Yeah.
They're like, we didn't think he'd be honest.
He clearly got paid off.
Okay, gotcha.
The prosecution had no case. It was dropped. They were all released, and Marm petitioned to get her diamonds back.
Wow.
She petty.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Marm set about recreating her New York life in Hamilton. She bought a two-story house and opened a dry goods store.
Was everything wet? Everything was just sopping wet?
Her two younger children moved to Hamilton. Marm joined the local synagogue and became an active member of the Hamilton community.
Who the fuck wooed at that? That infuriated me. Someone was like, Hamilton!
She sent a letter to friends in New York City announcing her new store, quote, I beg to announce to you that I have opened my new emporium in every respect the equal of my late New York establishment. I shall be pleased to continue our former pleasant business relations, promising alone to pay the best prices for the articles of which you may have for sale. With my present facilities, I am able to dispose of all commodities forwarded to me with dispatch and security. I am yours faithfully, F. Mandelbaum. She'd also transferred ownership of the warehouses before fleeing, so authorities in New York couldn't confiscate any of the merchandise in them.
This is just... I mean, how many laws got changed after this? They're like, all right. But what if she were to do this? They have like a fake Marm on a board. She could go there, and then we're screwed again. You see what I'm saying, Dan? So that's why we shut that loophole altogether. She'll figure out a goddamn way!
So she was basically taking the stuff from the warehouse and bringing it up and selling it.
It's great.
November 18th.
She just, I mean, really, what happened was she moved. That's all that happened. Right. At the end of all of this, she just moved to Canada.
November 1885, Marm's 18-year-old daughter, Annie, went to New York to visit friends, and she came down with pneumonia and died. Marm and Julia snuck back to the city to say goodbye to Annie. Julia shaved off his beard and hair. Marm couldn't do much because she was huge.
What about a big-ass hat?
From the New York Times, November 12th, 1885. Quote, "The thought of having her favorite child buried without taking a last look at her face touched a tender chord in the heart of the heart." Can't believe you just hiccup right there.
Wait, what?
There's a hiccup, right?
Yeah, there's a hiccup.
That was great. That was fucking awesome.
That's John. It's a long show. I mean, that's like eight shots, you know? I can't wait for it to start. Oh, when's he going to shout the date?
Last look at her face touched a tender chord in the heart of the hardened criminal. To gratify her wish, she took the chance of falling into the hands of police and passing her remaining days in prison. She showered kiss after kiss on the cheek of the dead girl, and her piteous cries brought tears to the eyes of the persons who witnessed the scene. Several times she attempted to leave the room, but she kept returning to the coffin and finally had to be carried away. Mm.
Jesus Christ.
It feels like we need a hiccup to break up the moment a little bit.
A crowd gathered outside the house. They'd come to pay their respects.
So this was not that low-key. I mean,
They were, but remember, the cops were always on her side. So the cops.
Right.
They were Marm's old criminals, bank thieves, pickpockets. Annie was buried next to Wolf. Marm and Julius did not make the trip to the cemetery, but took a train back to Canada.
Wolf was like, "I'm not dead." Hello?
I know I was boring, but this is fucked.
I was saying, come on, the whole time. I got an idea for a business.
But life in Canada wasn't the same to Marm. A reporter asked her how she liked living in Canada, and Marm said, quote, "The name of the place is enough to sicken me." It's such a fucking New Yorkers, just 100%. It's all funny and clappy until you're like Woody Allen, you've never seen a forest.
What are those things on the limbs?
She told someone else, quote, "I would gladly forfeit every penny of my wealth in order to once again breathe freely the atmosphere of the 13th Ward. I just want to smell shit again."
I miss that clam night soil dead cat odor.
On February 26, 1894, Frederica Mandelbaum died surrounded by her family from Bright's disease, kidney thing. She was 65.
Her obituary, solid for back then, right?
Yeah, that is pretty good life. Her obituary ran in the newspapers across the country. It mentioned her criminal past, but also called her, quote, "a woman of kindly disposition, broad sympathies, and large intelligence."
Those are all shots.
That's a little shot. They took a little shot.
If you know Marm like we know Marm, those are all shots.
The obituary guy was like, "I'm also writing a screenplay, and you can see the hint of the humor I put in them."
The New York Times said, quote, "her success was in a great measure due to her friendship for and her loyalty to the thieves with whom she did business. She never betrayed her clients, and when they got into trouble, she procured bail for them and befriended them to the extent of her power. Her body was returned to New York City to be buried alongside her husband and daughter. A huge crowd of mourners turned out for her funeral. Following Marm's service, several of the mourners reported to police that their pockets had been picked." What?
For Marm, they did it for Marm.
It is believed that $10 million worth
just
of goods.
Just crying, like, "I know." And then the other thing, I mean, just that she won't be the same.
They're just stealing from each other.
Yeah. I know, goodbye. Where's my handkerchief? You motherfucker, give me that.
Sorry. It's believed $10 million worth of goods passed through her stolen goods.
Holy shit.
Marm Mandelbaum.
Yeah.
Need more of those. More of those.
One of the greats.
That's a great story. We got a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
All right. So I'm going to do a little thing that you guys hate.
That part of the show's over. What a legend, though.
There's an author named David Wallace Wells, and he is friends with a climate scientist who is working with the New York City on how to deal with climate change. And they had a conversation, and he said that we're going to start building a seawall to save New York. And the seawall is going to take 30 years to build.
30 union years. That's like 70 real years.
So that, and he said, well, what does that mean? He goes, that means that Howard Beach is gone. Large parts of Queens are gone. And southern Brooklyn is gone. Those places will not have a future. They will not be part of New York City. People will not hand their family homes down to their children. They will stop doing repairs on subways. They will stop doing repairs on infrastructure. They will let that part of the city die. And that's climate change. And it's fucking happening now. And your house is on fire. And it's time to do something. So you guys know our group, Planet Change 10. We have finally gotten the incorporation papers that took 6 months to get. We will be putting up the site hopefully in the next couple of weeks. So you guys can start grouping up. And we're also working with some other people to make stuff that's going to be pretty powerful, I think.
Yeah.
We've gotten some of the big Hollywood fancies on board.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know. Good. What else can I say?
That's it.
Yeah. Do you want to make a joke before you end, or just?
No, I want it to end weird.
Yeah. Well, you certainly have. Thank you guys for coming so much. Give it up for Akash Singh.
Thank you guys.
We appreciate it. Thank you. Appreciate it.